This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anush, where I talk about wine in a fun and approachable way and bring you all insights of the world of wine. Welcome back to another episode of Wine and Dine in LA with Anush. Today, I have a very special guest. He's joining us all the way from New York, sommelier and wine educator. Such an interesting topic just popped up, and I had to find out more information about it. Thank you, Vitaly, for being such an interesting guest.
Of course. It's my pleasure.
So you mentioned something about the wine classes, the way that you organize them in themes. Tell us.
I have mentioned something about this interesting topics that it was a series of classes that I've done before and we'll do again. When I was kind of organizing all these interesting and any topics, I can apply that it doesn't just have to be about the grapes and the regions and the tasting profiles. It can be beyond that, because wine as a beverage has been around for thousands of years, and it's linked to our history and to some major events, and that shaped, you know, the world that we live in now. So I decided to link historical figures and the wines that, you know, they would have drank or from the places that were affected by them. So I did a couple of classes on, one of them was Hannibal Barca, the Phoenician Carthaginian general that led the Carthaginian side in the war with Rome. And because, you know, we don't really know that as much, but Carthage, which is located where now is Tunisia and Morocco, she made a lot of wine. So there is wine now in Algeria, in Tunisia, in Morocco, and you actually can buy it and taste it, and you would taste wine from those places that, you know, at some point, you know, were places that crazy historical events happened. So we had this, we tasted one from Morocco, one from Tunisia, one from Sicily, and one from Mallorca, kind of like following the conquest, following the fighting, and we discussed the history and the wines and what was the role of those wines and those events. Another one was about Alexander the Great, because not many know, but during the conquest that Alexander the Great led, which, you know, he made it all the way to India, in order to be able to make it so far, they actually had to use a lot of wine, because the water that was not always safe to drink. So every single soldier would get a ratio of 2 bottles of wine per day that they would mix with the water, local water, as they were moving, for it to be safe to be home. I found this wine from India, which was a pretty solid. I found it in a little wine shop in Washington, D.C., which has a surprisingly great selection as a place. And then we had a wine from Macedonia, one from Bulgaria, and another wine. And we've discussed, again, the history, the person, the events, and we tasted some wine. So kind of it was wine and history. And those are some of my favorite classes.
Wow, that is...
That's also why I love... That's, you know, some of the most delicious wines have incredible stories behind them.
You know, so did you, like, when you taste and, well, when you purchase and taste the wine, for example, you know, Tunisia, Morocco, etc., did you see any similarities in the grapes? And do they use same grapes? Or similarities in the styles? Obviously, in the ancient times, the winemaking techniques were different. So was there any commonality between, the trail, following the trail?
Well, I mean, you, of course, there's the place. So that sunshine, that heat, the elevation, the influence of the ocean, you can taste that in the wines. The wines are, of course, not the same that they were made back then. We don't really know what were the grapes, what were the techniques. I mean, we have an idea, and gladly those techniques and winemaking processes are kind of coming back. As you know, of course, the clay vessel fermentation, indigenous fermentation, skin maceration, all those kind of old techniques are coming back and becoming more and more popular. So you can actually taste those ancient techniques in the wines that are modern in many ways. But you do also, of course, have the influence of more modern wines. So, of course, Morocco and Tunisia, you have French grapes, Muscat and Syrah and Carignan that fit the profile of the place. You'd also, in other places, you do have some of the more old ancient grape varieties, like in Lebanon, Merwa, grape variety that probably dates back to those times in which the Phoenicians were exploring, and spreading the alphabet and the purple dye and grapes, they still are there. You have in Palestine, there's Dabuki, which is also a grape variety that who knows how old it is. It's probably thousands of years old. So if you look, you can find history in modern wine bottles, and that's quite fascinating, I think.
That is so fascinating. And just the idea of being able to find those wines of those producers, what a treat. Otherwise, Indian wine, I mean, I know that obviously they make wine in India, but I did not realize that they even bring it to the United States.
Not everywhere. Here's the thing. Washington, D.C. is a place that is quite unique for the United States. It's a non-state, so it doesn't have to go by the same rules, the same three-tier system as the rest of the country. So the rules of importation are a little bit more loose. So anyone that holds a wine license can import directly. So let's say if I have a small wine shop, and I want to bring a wine from Turkey and Lebanon or India, I can just do it directly from the winery rather than having an import license.
That's a
So yeah,
valuable
that's the
piece
unique
of
thing. So you can
information to
find,
know.
yes, you can find some very, very unique, very special wines in DC, in Washington, DC, that you will not find anywhere else. That's a
Oh.
little secret that I realized.
Wow, I did not know that. That is fantastic. So, and obviously, I'm glad to hear that some of the those stores take advantage and bring this variety that you can't even see anywhere because Indian wine, awesome. So, what kind of varietals did they use?
So in India, you have some Chenin, you have some Sauvignon Blanc, you also have some Sangiovese. Surprisingly, it's all in the north. There was a producer that I don't. It was actually imported in New York, but I don't really see it anymore. It was made by a couple that are doctors, and they are very passionate about wine and just decided to make their own, kind of start a project on their own. So because you do have grapes there, you have vineyards, you don't have as much that culture of winemaking. You do have the conditions, but that's not as supported and as popular. So the quantities, of course, are small. So far what I've tasted, not by profession. I'm passionate. I like the topic. I like to look into the past, and it's kind of fascinating to see how much of things repeat themselves, and how we have so much more in common with our ancestors than we think, even though events and people lived, thousands of years ago in places that we will never be able to visit. When you read about it, when you study it, you just realize how similar were they with us. Without all the technology and all the things that we have, there were still people like we are, and that's kind of one of my favorite parts about history, and also wine and history. People don't realize how much there
Exactly.
is to it. There's biology, chemistry, geography, philosophy, and of course history. Behind fermented grapes, there's much more than just tasting notes.
Absolutely, and that's the key. The more you learn about wines and the regions, the more you get into the history. So when people ask me, what's a good wine? What is a good wine that you like? And my typical response is that a good wine for me is a wine that you drink and then you get curious. Your curiosity leads you to research more about.
I did not start it, but I am one of the main instructors. At the moment, and kind of, the best thing about this format is that we get the freedom of kind of choosing the topics that we are passionate about. And if we believe in it, and if we can find the wines, then we can make it happen. So any topic, anything that comes to mind, if I wanted to do a class on Alexander the Great, I did it. I brought some house-made wine from Moldova, and I made a class using it. I whatever I can come up with, and I'm passionate and I'm interested, and if I know that there will be an interest in them, because it's a small format. It's 16 people. I teach classes at a place called Aster Center, which you have 36 people, and the tickets are a little bit more expensive, and it's longer. It's 2 hours long. So for people to have that commitment, time-wise, price-wise, you have to kind of stay a little bit more in a general topic. Because the boot camps, the beauty of it is that it's 1 hour long, $55 is four wines. You can just go, and even if it's not going to be something that you'll find super interesting, you only, your bet is not as high, multiple hours and a higher price point. Your bet is for tasting portions and a small bite and $55. So I think that that's the beauty of this format. Allows us to kind of be really creative and just, if I want to do a whole class on just Chenin Blanc as a grape, I can do that. If I want to do a class on Pinot Gris, which I actually did, because I think it's a very underrated grape variety, and because people think of Pinot Gris as of it's almost less interesting and less delicious, versions of it. It doesn't mean that the grape variety has anything to do with it. It's more about the style of winemaking. So a whole 1 hour class on one grape variety at one place and one region, then I can do it. I did the whole class on wines of Bulgaria and wines of Croatia and wines of Slovenia and wines of Hungary, which, generally, if you were to do a class, an event on those very specific, very small regions, it would be harder to do if it wasn't for this specific format, and if it wasn't for them to give us the freedom and trust us and the topics that we choose.
Do you have your loyal customers who pretty much come to every single class?
Yeah, yes, actually I do. They say there's a group of people, and then, interestingly enough, they started as customers and as guests, and then they became friends. Yeah, they come and go. People move, people stay, and so the class is 1 hour long, so we can do multiple different classes in one day. For example, the Armenian class, we're doing two of the same topic, but two sessions, the same wines, but two sessions, 6 p.m. and 7:30. But I used to do multiple different topics in the same day, so I'll do two, three, or even four different classes at the same time. They'll be connected. For example, we did the wines of Alsace, the wines of Jura, the wines of Savoie in the same day. So it's different regions, but they're kind of adjacent. They're in the same place in the same country. And would have guests that would come and stay for all three or four classes back to back, which was kind of amazing.
That is amazing. And have any of those guests turn into professionals themselves? Did they continue to pursue their sommelier certifications or their WSET certifications or become like a wine buyer, importer, you know?
That's a wonderful question, actually. Yeah, I had two people that approached me and said, I work in wine now because I took one of your classes a long time ago, and it sparked a passion for this beverage, and now it's my profession, which is it's amazing.
That is the
Some
best
people
reward.
already pursue, I know, right? Yeah, some people already pursue this career, so this is not something that inspired them to begin it, but it's something that helps them to get there. But I had two specific guests that were like, we did not think that become a job or become a passion, and we just continued coming and tasting and learning, and then at some point it just became obvious that that's what we want to do, and that's kind of amazing. Yeah, definitely.
Which book were you reading when you really got into the wine? You said that you picked up a wine book. Do you remember which book that
Yeah,
was?
yes, it was the 2001 version of the Wine Bible by Karen McNeil, which is a thick 1,000 page book, the Wine Bible. Yes, that's probably, if I had to recommend one book for someone to start, and kind of just if they wanted just to have one reference, I would suggest that, the Wine Bible. It the best way to read it is not from cover to cover, but just like randomly open it on a random page, and you'll really learn some interesting facts, and you'll learn something new, and you don't really have to start the whole kind of book and read it from cover to cover. I don't even think that I finished it. I'm not sure if I've actually gone through the whole thing, but I have that copy still, and it's all worn out, and it looks like it's been used a lot, which it has.
That's the best way to use the books, read through them. You know, when some people have books that are shiny sitting on the shelf, you know that those books are not read,
Exactly.
and that's not what those books want to be read. I have the copy as well, so I can completely relate. Wonderful book, and then there's the new edition coming up. I can't wait to get my version of that. What other sources or materials you would recommend for those who are wine enthusiasts but who want to go a little bit deeper to increase their knowledge?
I would recommend the Jancis Robinson's subscription to her website. That's one of my points of reference for a lot of the classes, including Armenia. She writes a lot about those regions and places that you don't see as much of information from other sources. So I would say Jancis Robinson's .org, I believe. It's I think about $120 a year. I think it's well worth the price. Besides that, Guild Somm, the Court of Master Sommeliers website that kind of helps people study through the certifications. I think that one has really, really useful articles and study guides. And besides that, just Google and learn. And I also realized that the best way to learn about a wine region is, if, in best case, is to travel to it. And the second best is to talk to people that make those wines, because that's their life, that's their passion, that's their, livelihood.
Or come to the
And
places like your wine bar where you are and participate
or
in
come to
boot
the, yes,
camps.
yeah. Or come to
Well,
the boot camps,
another
exactly, yes.
20 minutes just flew by.
Oh, yes, they did.
Let's just quickly recap about this upcoming Armenia boot camp class and let our listeners know where they can purchase the tickets.
On the class, there's two sessions on June 12th, which is 6 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. There will be held at Compagnie de Vins Naturels Wine Bar in Nolita, New York. You can purchase the tickets at the wine bar, but also at the website called TOCK.com. Just search for wine bootcamp, and they'll be there. The tickets are $55. The class 1 hour long. We'll purchase Armenian wines. We'll learn about the history, background, the terroir, the people that make those amazing wines, and it will be fun.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Vitaly. It was a pleasure to have you on my show, and we wish you lots of success.